From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Today, President Obama took a new turn at tackling the nation's mounting debt, which is now more than $12 trillion. He signed an executive order to create a National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. That commission's job is to come up with ways to reduce federal budget deficits that now exceed $1 trillion a year.
Mr. Obama named former Republican Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming and former Clinton White House Chief of Staff Erskine Bowles to head the bipartisan panel. I sat down with the two men earlier today to talk about what they hope to achieve. Senator Simpson and Mr. Bowles, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thank you.
Senator Simpson, you have joked with your co-chairman here about this new job. You called it a suicide mission. You think this is a kamikaze run for you too?
Well, I tell you, I think that there is a pleasure involved in knowing who my co-chairman is, Erskine. People say, well, what are you? You know, somebody said you're a stalking horse for this or that. And I said, we're stalking horses for our grandchildren. This is a critical issue. And I have to handle it with humor or else you'd cry. Because if the people of America can't figure out where they're headed and there isn't a single person in this administration or on the Hill or in either party that knows exactly where we're headed with these huge things, which can wipe out all discretionary spending within the next 20 years. And so here we go, off the cliff together, joining hands into the great sea, the wine dark Aegean Sea.
Mr.
Like Icarus in his wings melt.
We're getting deep here. Mr. Bowles, your colleague here, Senator Simpson, is speaking tongue-in-cheek, but this all does reflect the perilous ground you're entering here. The assumptions going in here would be you would have to raise taxes and severely cut spending on treasured entitlement programs, right?
Look, it's going to be tough. The great thing is the president has told us everything's on the table. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. This is a challenge for our country.
You said everything's on the table. Would one thing on the table be we have to raise the retirement age?
Everything's on the table. If we start this process by taking things off the table, we'll never get there.
Let's talk about the sharply divisive political climate that you two are entering. Senator Simpson, congressional Republicans have been dismissive of this commission. In fact, seven Republicans who initially proposed the bill, sponsored the bill, creating this commission, ended up voting against it. What is your message to them?
Well, get aboard or else forget your own grandchildren. I'd love to know why all seven of them voted against the package. All I know is that out of goodwill, if we can get to people of goodwill, and I think Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, who I know quite well, will appoint people to this commission that will hopefully realize that the country is bigger than the politics.
Erskine Bowles, when you were in the Clinton White House, the Republicans got the majority in both houses. There was a divided government, and some would say it was easier to be bipartisan then. You both needed each other, and you were able to get a balanced budget agreement through now. Very different time now, do you think? Are you facing tougher challenge?
Times are always different. But I can tell you, when President Clinton announced he was bringing me back to balance the budget, not a soul believed it could be done. But, you know, I went to see the Speaker, and I went to see the Majority Leader and the Minority Leaders in both houses, and I said, look, we're going to have to work together to get this budget balanced. And I earned their trust, and that's what I think Senator Simpson and I will do in this process. We got to earn people's trust.
Your recommendations will come out by December after the midterm elections. You cannot force a congressional vote on what you recommend. What happens after your work is done, do you think? Senator Simpson first?
Don't ask me. I just know that we will have pushed the ball down the field a little further. I can promise you that the issue will be moved forward so that when the demagogues get up on their hind legs from the left or the right or the flat earth or the round earth society, that they will know that there's no escape from where we're headed. No escape at all. So instead of babbling into the vapors, it's, hey, Jack or Jill, what the hell are you going to do now?
Let's talk just a bit about the numbers. I mean, if you look at last year's deficit, $1.4 trillion, nearly 10% of GDP. The goal for this is what, to get it to 3% by 2015? That's going to be painful, right?
Look, there are no easy choices. We've got a $1.6 trillion deficit. We've got public debt of about $9.3 trillion. That's about 64% of GDP. If we don't do something about it, it will gobble this budget up. Just stop and think. If you just look at the 10-year projections, interest alone is projected to go from $188 billion to increase by $650 billion. That's over $800 billion. Think what we could do with those resources if we had them to put in education or innovation or research. This is an issue we have to tackle.
Before we started the interview, we were chatting about your grandchildren, and I wonder if that's really what's guiding you through this. Is their future and what's in store, Senator?
Well, I'm not kidding you at all. I watched last year when they were all grappling with Social Security, whether privatization, whatever, and to me that's a very significant issue. But all I can tell you is unless we do something, there won't be anything there for them. Well, it'll be there, but it will be 75% of what they expected to get instead of 100. And as I say, I've spent a whole lifetime among the naysayers. I've always said we're here on Earth to do things for others, and what the others are doing here, I haven't the foggiest idea. And there are a lot of bitchers and whiners and snorters out there, and we intend to listen to them all and then crush them. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. It must have been a sick
Erskine
thing.
Bowles, anything you'd like to add to that?
Oh, I love Alan Simpson.
What about your grandchildren?
I've got 7 grandkids under 4. They are my life. If we don't do something about this is to me like me going out and buying a brand new Cadillac, driving it all over the world and beating it up till it's not worth very much, but I charged it to my grandkids. We have got to take this on, and Alan and I are both determined to lead this effort.
Erskine Bowles, Alan Simpson, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Alan Simpson is a former Republican senator from Wyoming. Erskine Bowles was President Clinton's chief of staff. They are the co-chairs of President Obama's new bipartisan commission on the deficit.
The theme for next month's Academy Awards ceremony appears to be more. There will be double the Best Picture nominees and double the hosts. But Bob Mondello says this is no way to make a long night shorter, so he offers this modest proposal.
As long as we're having categories with 10 nominees, I know how the Academy can save time, eliminate 2 acceptance speeches, and strike a blow against sexism all in one fell swoop. Just make the Oscars gender neutral. Nobody says Best Director and Best Directress, or Best Editor and Best Editress. So why Best Actor and Best Actress? Combine them and let the best performer win. I mean, seriously, who cares about Colin Firth versus George Clooney when you can pit Sandra Bullock against Jeff Bridges in a brawl of the drawls?
I don't need y'all to approve my choices, all right? But I do ask that you respect them.
I'm Bab Black. When I die, my tombstone will have my real name on it. Until then, I'm just gonna stay bad.
Now, I can just hear the objections to combining categories. Men get all the roles, they're higher paid, their pictures have bigger budgets. And let me concede most of that, but note that it's new. I'm guessing the Motion Picture Academy's original logic for separating the acting awards by gender was that if they hadn't, in the 1920s and 30s, Joan Crawford and Greta Garbo would have walked off with all the trophies. Take 1935. It was such a good year for the likes of Betty Davis, Katharine Hepburn, Merle Oberon, and Claudette Colbert that they had to add a 6th slot in the Best Actress category. The men, meanwhile, couldn't even field a full slate. Only 4 nominees, and the 3 who didn't win all came from one picture, Mutiny on the Bounty.
You're sending me to my doom, eh? I'll live to see you, all of you, hanging from the highest yardarm in the British fleet.
Who knows what they'd have done if the Bounty hadn't sailed until the following year. Yes, of course, the game has changed since then, but in a way that could actually work against men at Oscar time. Men monopolize blockbusters, which never win acting awards. You want that neutered gold statue these days. You have to play in what used to be called women's pictures, something more touchy-feely. Besides, acting's not like a shot put competition. Body mass and physical strength don't give men an advantage when it comes to emoting effectively. I mean, look at this year's supporting actor nominees. No disrespect to Matt Damon's rugby playing, or Woody Harrelson's crying, Christopher Plummer's erudite dithering, or the respective killing styles of Stanley Tucci and Christoph Waltz, but not one of those guys would stand a chance if he had to compete with Monique's ferociously manipulative mom.
So those things that she told you I did to her, who else was going to love me? Who was going to make me feel good?
The Academy will almost certainly make Monique feel good on Oscar night, and that would be no less true if she were competing with the boys. I'm Bob Mondello.
The winner takes it all, the loser standing small.
Tiger Woods makes a public appearance today, his first in more than 2 months. He's been the focus of intense attention since a car crash outside his home in Florida, which led to revelations about his infidelity, which led to a crisis in golf. An athlete who's been an industry in himself will speak before cameras late this morning. NPR's Mike Pesca will be there, although, Mike, I suppose we should define what we mean by being there.
Right. I think a writer once said there's no there about Oakland, but maybe you could say it about Punta Verde, Florida, because there will be press and there will be a conference room, and the press will be in the conference room, but Tiger Woods people have been clear to say that this is not a press conference. Media masses are invited to go to a hotel near the golf course where Tiger Woods will be making his statement. And I have found out the clubhouse at this golf course, which is the TPC at Sawgrass, is a 77,000-square-foot Mediterranean Revival-style clubhouse. I read that on the website, but I won't be able to see this clubhouse because the media will be corralled elsewhere, even though you'd think at 77,000 square feet there'd be enough room for us right there in the building.
Well, you know, you've got to have room for the pro shop. And they want to make sure, basically, that he doesn't get any questions even shouted at him from across a rope line or something like that. That's what this is about, right?
That's basically the idea. Everything about Tiger Woods is very, very tightly controlled. And the plan was to have three writers from the golf world and three writers from wire services cover this for everyone. But actually, the writers from the golf world rose up and protested. And the Golf Writers Association of America said, this is not a press conference. This is not how the media should be treated. We're not attending. So the AP, Reuters, and Bloomberg are going to send their reporters. There will be a single camera. The camera will have the one feed available, and anyone who wants to take this feed can. And according to press counts, everyone in the world, all the networks and so forth, will be taking this feed. But it will only be covered by three live people who are invited to take color and to report as best they can with notes and so forth. And everyone else will have to rely on their firsthand and eyewitness accounting.
Mike, you said this is in a clubhouse at TPC Sawgrass. We should mention for people, this is the heart of the pro golf world, isn't it?
Yes, this is where the PGA Tour has its headquarters, and Tiger Woods management worked out with the PGA Tour, who very much wants Tiger Woods to come back. They worked this out. And of course, you know, this weekend there is golf being played, and it's being played in Tucson, Arizona at the Accenture Match Play Championship. And some of the golfers there said, why is Tiger Woods speaking during this other tournament? And it was explained by his representatives that there is a week break in his therapy. They didn't exactly say what kind of therapy he was getting, but this is the 1 week break. He spent some time with his family, they said, and now he's going to make a statement. And they didn't say exactly what's going to happen next, but everyone expects this to be the first step in his comeback. Maybe he will say where he is playing next. Maybe he won't. But this is a necessary step, and getting it out of the way will lay the groundwork for him actually playing golf, which everyone on the golf tour wants.
So what is he supposed to say that's supposed to bring closure to this scandal and get him back to golf?
Yeah, I don't know that there is anything. First of all, when you think about it, are there words available to him? I don't know. But I think it's more like, look, if you look at the necessary process that we must go through, saying something is necessary, that's maybe what will happen today. And after that something, then golf can be played.
Mike, always a pleasure talking with you.
And I you.
NPR's Mike Pesca is somewhere in Florida, but definitely not at the clubhouse at TPC Sawgrass, where Tiger Woods will be speaking today. You're listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.